This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. And I'm joined by the newest member of the Illinois General Assembly, State Senator Omar Aquino from the 2nd Senate District, which is west, a little bit northwest.
Northwest side in Chicago mainly, but a portion of Elmwood Park as well. We go as far...
Mayor Saviano over there.
Yeah, skip. We go as far west as 74th Court and as far east as Racine Street. So it's a pretty pretty nice stretch on the northwest side there.
And you were sworn in on Friday or on July 1st?
July 1st, yeah. So I didn't get to actually go down to Springfield and take any of those votes, even though I got some calls of saying, we're going to vote out every incumbent. I was like, well, I wasn't in there for that one. You can blame me on some others.
I'm not on those roll calls yet.
Yeah, not
yes,
yet. Not
yes,
yet.
Yes. And Senator Aquino replaced former State Senator Willie Delgado, who had been in the General Assembly in the Senate since 2006.
That's correct. He's actually the first Latino to ever serve in both chambers.
And now you are the youngest Latino ever to serve in the Illinois General Assembly, and we were making fun of his age off the air as because I'm such a crabby old man, I've been told. You know, when you look at what has – and obviously you've been keeping an eye on it. You were – you know, you are the presumptive senator because you have no opposition.
That's
in
correct.
November.
Mm-hmm.
But so obviously you've been watching this game. I mean, and you've been in the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, you worked for Tammy Duckworth, outreach coordinator. You know the political game. But when you even still, you've been outside it enough that it's got to be as frustrating and maddening to the rest of us, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things that we were speaking about it earlier. I got in July 1st. I didn't choose that. It ended up sort of just happening that the Senator Delgado earlier in the month in June decided that, hey, this is going to be my last month. And it didn't early on. It did not look like anything was going to happen, that there wasn't going to be a stopgap budget, that more than anything, people were saying to me, well, if you get in during the summer, be prepared to go down in Springfield this summer. And, you know,
enjoy Springfield in the summertime.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which I hear is lovely this time of the year. So
it is now. Wait till state fair time. That's okay. When it really steams up down there.
It's what's frustrating is that, you know, I've continued to sort of knock on doors and talk to my neighbors, and it's frustrating because they're frustrated. You know, they're tired of the lack of action that is happening down in Springfield. And so they want, no matter it, people are in Illinois, I say in general, I don't think they care if it's Democrat or Republican right now. They want us to come together and move things forward.
When I spoke with Amanda Vinicky earlier, I think that frankly was the key to why something happened, was because it moved beyond the issue of people caring about the partisanship as much as just the dysfunction.
No, absolutely. I was listening earlier. I think Amanda's spot on when she says that, you know, it really came from pressure from rank and file to, you know, to the leadership to say, hey, let's get something done. But that came from those rank and file members being in their district and having people either at their doors or giving them a call, an email, and saying, hey, I want something to get done. I don't care how you get it done. Do something. That's what, you know, that's your job. And so, you know, as a representative, as a senator, everyone in our district's our boss. So we got to listen to our boss. If not, hey, the democratic process, as much as we get hired in when we're elected, we can get fired as well, as, you know, many of elected officials have seen that.
So what do you as a newcomer bring to the table?
Well, I think, you know, I bring a fresh perspective. I bring independence. You know, I'm going to be working hard to represent the people that, you know, live in the 2nd District that are my neighbors. And so, you know, I'm not one that has been in there generation over generation. It's like, no, I know best for, you know, my community. It's no, I got to listen to my community and know what, you know, vote for my neighbors. And so what I'm hoping to bring in is just a sort of an outside perspective. I understand how things get done in Springfield. I was down there. I worked in the House for some time. But, you know, I'm looking forward to working with other, you know, in a bipartisan and bicameral way. I'm looking forward to also work with someone pretty young named Will Guzzardi, who's on the north side. Not one of my state reps, but just south of me. And so looking forward to, you know, working with some like-minded people and just try to move some things, some good legislation forward.
Everybody that comes in stresses how they want to work bipartisanly. But as we've seen over the decades, that issue of bipartisanship, and we've seen it nationally, and now it's come to Springfield, where the partisanship takes over, and that compromise is a dirty word, that compromise is viewed by some as surrendering your principles. And, I mean, you worked in staff down in Springfield, so you've seen that firsthand, too, about, you know, where do we break the impasse? Does it have to be in a crisis mode, such as what we just have gone through with, you know, things like the threat of schools not opening? You talk about constituents being angry. I mean, if schools hadn't opened, you know, everybody was going to wear the jacket for that.
Absolutely. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, when we talked about, you know, how the problems with our schools right now, I'm actually, as someone from Chicago, a product of CPS, I'm actually glad that it was the entire state that was sort of suffering and not just Chicago, because we have a governor who at every point was saying, no more money to Chicago, it's a bailout, as if he didn't represent the people of Chicago, that he represented Central and Southern Illinois, everywhere but Chicago. And so, you know, it's good that something, you know, the stopgap budget, it's great that something happened. However, it's not something that we should be saying, oh, this is victory. Oh, we finally
done it. I don't think anybody's singing Kumbaya.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but I think to have some optimism, I think it shows that, yeah, when push comes to shove, we can actually work together and get something done. I'm looking forward to trying to work with a lot of, you know, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, but the man that I'm not necessarily holding my breath that he wants to work with me is our governor. And I say that because of every single thing that he has done since being in office, or the lack of, you know, taking action. You know, he's really stuck on sort of this political agenda, this turnaround business agenda, austerity agenda that he wants to set, you know, push down in Illinois, when I don't think I would argue that some members in his own, you know, caucus probably doesn't want that. I know people in the state of Illinois don't want it. And I know people in my district don't. So, you know, if we can move things forward and try to pass a budget and not say, hey, everything that I sign has to come with these so-called reforms, we might be able to get something done.
Well, indeed, the absence of the turnaround agenda was one reason that the stopgap budget was done.
Absolutely. Look,
but as the governor says, he terms that as a bridge to, quote, reform.
What's funny is that we finally get a place where the governor says, all right, I'll put my agendas to the side and I'll sign something. You know, let's negotiate and get to a compromise. And we get there. And the first thing, instead of saying, hey, you know what, if I actually shelve this turnaround agenda for some time, we might actually get, you know, push some legislation, you know, be able to pass something. Instead, he says, well, the turnaround agenda is never going to die in Illinois. You know, it's a if you just saw where if you don't use that as a criteria, we actually can come up and, you know, the General Assembly can come to some compromise. We should be kill the idea. It's not, it's a turnaround agenda is a failure. Crane's business is, you know, who were big supporters of his during his primary run and general election run, called it a failure, called since he's been in office, they said it's been an entire failure, his tenureship. Governor Edgar, who's a Republican, had said the turnaround agenda is the reason we're in this, the impasse that we're in right now. So, you know, it's not just, you know, myself as a Democrat saying, you know, trying to attack a Republican governor. It's just saying this is the reality of the situation. It's not, it's a big problem of why nothing's getting done in Springfield.
We're speaking with State Senator Omar Aquino, State Senator from the 2nd District, Democrat, City of Chicago, with a little slice of Skip Saviano's territory in Elmwood Park. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. 7:17 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is your Sunday Spin. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. I'm joined by State Senator Omar Aquino, the newest member of the Illinois General Assembly, and we're talking about what he sees ahead for Springfield. You were touching on the turnaround agenda as kind of the key to what had been the impasse. But is there any part of the governor's agenda that you could support?
I don't know about support, but I would say that I would have an open ear towards independent maps. I mean, there's going to be a judicial ruling later this month. I think the 21st, the judge just said this past Thursday, on possibly getting on a ballot for a referendum. The only concern with, taking the maps out of making the maps out of legislators' hands is that as a Latino, as a person, a minority representing a minority majority district, I want to make sure that our state reflects the population that we have, so that we have districts that represent, communities of color. And so I know that there's a lot of groups, though, like the Latino Policy Forum, which I'm looking forward to speaking to, that support that. And I just sort of want to, I'm open to sort of listening towards that. But when you're talking about,
you don't have a comfort level for it.
Not yet. But I would say, attacks on working class families through like trying to take away, creating this state into a right to work state. That's not happening on my watch. I wouldn't vote to take someone's collective bargaining rights away. I think if you work any job in this country, it should be your right to come together with your colleagues and just fairly negotiate wages and benefits. I think that should be a right. And so,
what about workers' comp?
In terms of reforms that are going to be supporting the worker, that if someone gets injured on their job, they're going to get their benefits and pay from it. These are things that, they're going to come up for negotiation. I'm not going to say that I'm not going to listen at all, but, independent maps are one of those things that I'll consider, but we'll have to see.
All right. We've got a call from Mike. Mike, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question for the assemblyman. What is it that you're really opposed to in Rauner's proposals for reform? Because so far all I've heard is that from all of the Democrats, or the majority, I should say, that we need more money, we want to spend more money, we can't support this cutback, we can't support that cutback. But you're just putting the state further and further in debt. And amongst the other states, this is probably the worst-run state ever, okay, of all of them. When are you guys going to wake up and say it's not a matter of getting things done? Because in the eyes of Democrats, it's give me more money so I can spend it here, spend it there to ensure that I get reelected.
All right, Mike, thank you very much for your question. Senator, I mean, let's face it, there's that belief out there that
sure,
it's about spending the money.
No, well, I'll say that, Mike, thanks for the call and thanks for the question. Let me make something very clear. No Democrat, Republican, there's no one, I don't think, has ever raised their hands and said, I want to pay more taxes. And as a legislator saying, like, we want to make sure that my neighbors and our people are paying more. I think that the argument is that we are living in a reality where it's just basic arithmetic. Unfortunately, because of the mismanagement that's happened in Springfield over decades, we are in a situation where we just can't cut our way out of the problem that we're in. I mean, we've seen that with the lack of budget with the current governor. I mean, he, I think, even realizes that because every single proposal for a budget that he's had hasn't been balanced. He's proposed budgets that were out of balance because we need more revenue. The argument that I make is, and this is what I ran on, is that I think we need progressive forms of revenue. We need to completely change the way we generate revenue in this state. Our state is one of the most regressively taxed states, where that means that those that cannot afford to pay more are actually are put on the burden to pay a lot more in terms of percentage-wise from their income. And those that can afford aren't asked to pay as much. So corporations and the wealthy, I'm just asking that they pay their fair share. So if that's through a millionaire's tax, if that's through a progressive income tax, and I do realize that we need to change the Constitution in order to do that, because at least for our income tax, it's on a flat rate by the Constitution. But I'm willing to put that in a referendum to say, hey, let the people of Illinois decide if we want to change our Constitution so that we can have a progressive income tax. And I think what I'm saying is unfortunately, we're in a situation we do need revenue. I'm asking who are we asking to get that revenue from? And I just say it needs to be in a fair and balanced way. And right now, it's definitely not.
What about as far as expanded sales tax? That's been something that's been bandied about. Do you have any thoughts on that as a revenue source?
I mean, the thing is, we've done that, like in the county, we've expanded sales tax.
Well, they've increased it, but expanding it to services, for example, that kind of thing.
I think that's just more of a sort of a regressive, form of taxation. I think you have to really change the way we tax, especially on the income, because that's the reason why our property taxes are so high. It's because the way that we don't tax enough on our income in this state. We have to tax elsewhere. And so that's what, I mean, we've seen that when we increased the income tax just a few years ago from 3.75 or whatever.
3.75
to 5% temporarily. It actually sort of helped us out, it was a benefit. We were actually
paying bills is what paying pensions is what we were doing.
Yeah, I don't want to say it was getting us out of the situation we're in. It wasn't, but it was at least getting us to a better place. And so when it came back down, we saw where, we just don't have the money. We don't have enough revenue to provide for a lot of things that are needed. I think MAP grants are needed. It allows someone who wants to get a better education and a better job and become, a productive person in our state, provides them an opportunity to go to, get to go to college. And, if we're not giving, things out like that, and saying like, oh, well, it depends where you come from and your family and your neighborhood that you get to choose to go to college or not. That's unfair and not right.
Well, that's the way the grade schools are, though. Grade and high schools in many respects.
No, absolutely. And that's why I'm fully supportive of my colleagues, Andy Menard's bill to change the way that we are allocating monies to school. I think the funding formula definitely needs to change in the state.
But that's a very complicated fraught with all kinds of peril about the winners and losers argument, unless you have the revenue to support something that, you can at least kind of hold school districts that might lose harmless for a period of time.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to how we're generating revenue.
But it goes back to revenue.
Yeah, it goes back to, the argument always goes back to revenue. And so I don't think there can be anyone that can, in the General Assembly, even our governor, I don't think there's anyone can say that we can cut our way out of the situation that our state's in. Unfortunately, because of mismanagement over decades, we are in a situation that we need revenue. But it's how do we get that revenue? How are we changing it to make it in a more fair and equitable way? Right now, it's not, because trust me, Mike, I'm sure if you live in Chicago, you're not too excited about the prospects of another increase in your property tax. And I'm saying that there's proposals out there, a progressive income tax can possibly bring down your property taxes if we could push towards something like that.
I want to ask you about pensions and public employee pensions.
Sure.
Because, obviously, that's a big chunk of the money that the state spends. It's money that can't be spent elsewhere. Not to say that, as the courts have ruled that, the employees or public employees are entitled to the pension rights of when they were first hired. And so you have, as Amanda talked about, kind of the conditional idea of giving Chicago additional state money to help cover its pension nut, the only city the property taxpayers pay that huge percentage for their pensions. Yeah. But that's conditional on some kind of, quote, pension reform, unquote, getting done in Springfield.
It's one of those things that the I understand that there's the governor wants reforms of the pensions. However, our Supreme Court has already said that the, you know, this is a contract. This is something that has to be, you know, people are, as you said, entitled to these because that's what was promised them when they, you know, when they took their employment. And so that's for some, that is their only income when they retire. And to say that we're going to cut that in some way, you know, I would say if there's any reforms that are going to come up, I just want to make sure that labor is there to negotiate those things. That CTU, IFT, especially with the teachers' pensions, that if they come to some sort of compromise with the governor, then absolutely, then I would support that, but only if it, you know, involves labor in the negotiations. The other thing is that in terms of, I wanted to mention something that you and Amanda were talking about, that the governor says that, you know, giving money to Chicago is a bailout, but we never talk about how Chicago pays for everyone else's pension in the state, or teachers' pension throughout the state. You know, Chicago gets to you know, the foot of that bill, yet the state doesn't come and help, you know, Chicago ever. So to say that, oh, this time, you know, the state is going to give some money towards, you know, Chicago's teachers' pensions, but with this condition, well, we don't have a condition in giving to everyone else in the state, though. So I think that's a farce.
It's part of the joys of living in the city by the lake.
Yeah.
State Senator Omar Aquino, the newest member of the Illinois General Assembly, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this.